With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I am your host, Phyllis Govan. With me today, the gadget queen herself, back Emma Stefanski, to talk about the gadget of all gadgets, Apple computer versus Microsoft, sort of, kind of,
it's kind so of gadget. True. I actually didn't even make that connection that this is also technically a gadget movie.
Yep.
Computers are gadgets. The
computers are gadgets.
One might say.
Yeah. So before we were on mic, I asked you how you were, and you said, better than this movie.
Mm-hmm.
A fair dig. I want to start in terms of, because there's a little bit of, I don't want to say it's generational, although to some degree it is, because you are but a child in comparison to me.
Baby.
You're like a baby person, a very tall, like stretched out baby person.
Really weird looking baby.
But I bring this up because I do feel like this type of thing, the TV movie, the TV biopic, was a thing. Even I would argue it was a bigger thing even sort of before me. And this was sort of, you know, a little bit of the I don't even know if this was the end of that, but it's near the tail end of these TV biopic movies. Now we have like 8 or 10 episode limited series about said famous person and their, then, you know, whatever they did or didn't do. And I would argue that this particular story definitely needed more time to really unpack what we were seeing. But it does feel indicative of a certain type of thing that existed, right? Where it was like you had a checklist of greatest hits of a famous person or a famous conflict, and you needed to hit all these things so the audience felt fulfilled. Would you agree that this falls into that camp?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of mainly the thing about this movie, is that it's like, here is everything that happened. In 90 minutes or less. Here's the past, like, how much time? 10 years or something?
Oh my God.
Like that?
I mean, it's interesting because I hit play on this movie, and I immediately was like, right, it's one of these. And weirdly, I had like a little sort of well of nostalgia that hit me at first, because I was like, oh, these are kind of, I remember when these scratched an itch, right? When like people wanted to see a feud or to see some. Do you ever see the Late Shift? Have you ever seen that movie, the HBO movie? similar in that it was the Leno Letterman fiasco that transpired in the early 90s. So it was about their, you know, Letterman being offered or reneged on the Tonight Show, and then Leno getting it, and then blah, blah, blah. You know, Letterman gets the CBS gig, and then it becomes this battle between the two of them. Whatever. Like, it's actually a fun thing to watch because it's a little bit cartoony and it's a little bit kind of over the top. But it, I think you might. Oh, Jesus. It is Michael. Is it Higgins? What's his name? I think he's the guy who's from, he's in Licorice Pizza, everyone's favorite role of the.
John Michael Higgins. Oh, yeah. The from Licorice Pizza.
That was just, I literally was just watching it. That's why I made that association. And then the other, and then Leno is played by, who is it? Did you type in like the Late Shift so you can see what they look like?
I did. Yeah. It's Daniel Roebuck.
Yeah. Yes. It's pretty insane. Oh. But I actually think
Bates
you
is in this.
She is.
Bob Balaban's in this.
It's actually kind of good. I would recommend, if it's still on HBO Max, because who knows what's on HBO Max anymore. I highly recommend watching it because it's legit fun. It's one of those things where it's like, it does all the stuff that this movie does, but it has fun doing it. Whereas this movie oddly seems to be like taking itself kind of seriously.
It's very like Social Network, like every and
well,
I
the
guess
worst version of the Social Network. Yes, confused,
but yeah, it's like it's very much like these guys who were, you know, rivals and pals and doing disrupting computers and shit. I'm like, yeah, okay, I've seen this movie before. Fincher directed.
But this movie does predate that film, but your point still stands. I, you know, it's funny. I couldn't help but think about that, and obviously the Sorkin Steve Jobs film as well while watching this, because I feel as though you've seen the Steve Jobs. Oh shit! Someone just got a pointing.
Like,
yeah, I know.
Sad business meowing.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
He's feisty, that guy. Do you want to feed him?
No, to be clear, he's had dinner. He just needs everybody to know.
Okay, all right. So you've seen the Steve Jobs film, correct?
Yeah.
Fan, not a fan?
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's great. hilarious is an interesting choice of word, but sure. Just a laugh a minute.
Yeah. It's a
but both comic. Of those films, obviously both written by Aaron Sorkin, seemed as though he was going out of his way to buck any sort of biopic preconceived notions, right? Of like, I don't want to tell a story in a straight line. I don't want people to feel as though they know where it's all going. I want to be able to sort of come at these things and unpack these people's lives in an interesting and complex way, right?
Right.
This could not be any less that, right? Like, this is just like so by the book.
It clearly like kind of tries something. Like, it starts with the 1984 commercial, and then like what's his name is like a talking head for a portion of it.
Wozniak. Yeah. Is the only one who's a talking head though, weirdly, is Steve Wozniak. It's
stop it.
Is he trying to eat? Is this the problem?
Oh, he's on top of my magazines.
Let's
just keep going.
You sure?
I might have to stand up for a second.
Okay. This is amazing.
Get off. There you go. Thank you.
Getting some great cat shit for the Patreon right now for our listeners that are able to see video. You just got to see Emma reprimand.
Subscribe to the Patreon.
This is if ever there's a reason to subscribe. So here's the thing. There's a bunch of stuff. I actually found this, I do think, is actually going to lend to a very interesting conversation, because I do think that this, unfortunately, because of when this film comes out and because of what they know about Apple and Bill Gates in 1999 when they make this, now you watch this and you're just like, the end of this movie is kind of laughable, right? Because you're just like, it makes it seem as though like Bill Gates got him. And you're like, no.
You guys ever heard of iPhones?
Like, it is just, you watch it and you're just like, oh, 1999. You just didn't know that in less than like probably 5 years, Apple's going to be far more important and far more interesting than Microsoft ever will be. That's not to say that Microsoft isn't a valuable company still. It is, but it's completely irrelevant, right? Like in terms of the zeitgeist or whatever you want to call it. No one's buying, you know, fucking Compaq and Dell computers anymore. And except
Microsoft event.
Right. There's no Microsoft event. Like the biggest thing that I heard recently was that Netflix got in bed with Microsoft in terms of figuring out the technology to put the ads in sometime next year. So like that's anyway, this is all just to say that the structure of this movie is almost like a shell game, which is that they're getting you invested in Steve Jobs while Bill Gates kind of futzes around in the background like a Batman villain. Right. And then at the end, you're like, see, Bill Gates was the smarter one. And you're like, but, you know,
what's happening right now?
I have my own Batman villain in my apartment right now, disrupting this.
But do you start like structurally, this movie's been fucked by history is ultimately what I'm getting at, right?
Yes. It ends with Steve Jobs, like sitting in a Adirondack chair with like children around him,
one of which he's I don't believe was close with near the end of his life. The whole Lisa thing,
if the
Walter Jacobson book that the movie Steve Jobs or the movie Jobs is based on is accurate, the whole Lisa thing was fraught, to say the least. So this movie just kind of skirts around it a little bit and doesn't really try to kind of grapple with it.
Yeah. It doesn't have time. It's only 90 minutes. There's a lot more stuff to get through.
It has too much stuff. So, okay, to just give a very brief context, spanning the years of 1971 to 1997 and based on the book by Paul Freiberger and Michael Zwane's 1994 book, Fire in the Valley, The Making of the Personal Computer, Pirates of Silicon Valley explores the impact that the rivalry between Steve Jobs, played by Noah Wiley, and Bill Gates, played by Anthony Michael Hall, had on the development of the personal computer. It aired on TNT, a channel known for quality.
What was their thing? Was it Ween movies or something? What was it?
What?
The like TNT slogan.
Oh, shit. It's what like it? Something about drama. We got drama or something like that, isn't it?
It's like We Know Drama. We Know Drama. Oh, what as of 2014, it's boom.
Stop it.
It's just
speaking of Batman villains.
Oh, okay.
It's just boom. By the way, it also will cease to exist in a matter of a year or so anyway, since they've decided to shutter it. But it premieres on TNT on June 20th, 1999. Listen to this. Pirates of Silicon Valley has 89% on Rotten Tomatoes and 92% from audiences. People fucking loved this thing.
How many, like, out of how many people, though?
I don't know what the aggregate
is. Is it, like, the five people who would have watched this live and been like...
the friends and family of the people that made it? Variety said... It's a brilliant piece of filmmaking and a wildly entertaining geek tragedy with the stylistic feel of true art.
Geek tragedy. That's very funny.
It is funny. Geek tragedy.
Funny Variety.
Yeah. But also just like stylistic feel of true art. I mean, even in 1999, you're watching this and thinking that this is, I mean, I guess the question here is what was the bar for a TV movie back then? And I imagine it was relatively low.
Right.
But
yeah.
Still. So I want to sort of unpack the something that I feel like there's been a million think pieces about, and I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this, which is kind of the whole geek shall inherit the earth thing, right? Which is that in 99, we obviously don't have toxic fandom and we don't have, you know, Steve Bannon hasn't weaponized incels. And we just don't have the same world that we live in right now. So watching this, I couldn't help but feel like it has real adoration for these people. It really thinks that they are the most brilliant people in the world. Do you feel as though, I mean, you didn't like it, totally fair. I didn't like it much either. But like, how did you feel about the sort of, when you compare it to Social Network and Steve Jobs, both of which are also quite flattering in terms of the technological advancements of the individuals that made these things, but at least is willing to acknowledge the flaws that exist within these people, I don't feel like in this they dig beneath the surface of either of these guys.
It does, like, yeah. And in that way, in those, in comparison to those two movies, it's definitely like,
yes, sure,
weakened by the fact that it does not really pay much attention to the fact that all these guys sort of suck. Like the scene where they're having like that beach party and the guys are trying to convince Steve Jobs to like please pay that poor woman a measly $20,000. In fact, more. He should pay her more than that, they say. Yes. And he's like, I just don't want to.
She's like, that's my kid.
That's like a good scene. But then the movie's just like, and anyway, we're going to time jump to like three years later and we're not going to address that again.
The scene that it also makes me think about, and it's a scene that as it was unfolding, I was like, what are we doing? And what's the point of this? Is that really gross scene where someone's interviewing for a job and he keeps asking if the guy's a virgin?
Oh my God. I actually wrote down, I have like five notes, and one of them is the virgin IBM versus the Chad Apple computer, which is exactly what that conversation was.
That is a perfect way of putting it. It's like he negged the guy because he just
insulted the guy. I mean, let's be honest. He was like, do you have sex with your wife? He's like, you look like an IBM guy. And he puts his gross feet on the table. Horrible, horrible.
I just don't even, like, it seems like that I think, I mean, first of all, I get the impression that they weren't interested in pissing anyone off. They didn't want to get sued.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of this just like, well, we'll just make Steve Jobs look kind of like a bro, you know, or like make him seem like a cool guy as opposed to like the actual asshole that from all intents, you know, it certainly sounds like he was. So what you get is this weird kind of like dick wagging scene that certainly has no purpose.
No.
It was very
strange. It's not even in there to make him look bad. Like that's what confused me about that scene. It's like, it's kind of supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
But then the guy's also like, that was really fucked up that you said that. And he's just like, whatever. You don't understand me. Yeah. Then the movie moves on another 3 years.
Yeah. It, you know, it is fascinating because I do feel like the pockets of stuff that they decide to unpack are conscious in the sense that like, we want to talk about Steve Jobs, and his sort of drug hippie kind of cult leader almost thing. But like, we're going to just graze past it because like you said, we just don't have the time to really unpack it, but we're still going to give you like a drug induced weird sort of like dream vision thing.
That was so bad. That was the moment when I was like, this movie's just sort of bad. This is not good. When
bad, no good. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's music playing. I'm like, you've never done drugs before in your life. Whoever's the weird meeting with the guys who directed this movie. I'm like,
being like, you're a virgin.
Are you a virgin?
There are a lot of things in the Steve Jobs movie that I know people didn't love the movie. I think expectations were very high for it, obviously, coming off of Social Network. And I would argue I really love the movie, but I don't totally know that Michael Fassbender was the right choice. I really like his performance, just to be clear, but it's like he's a very, like, Michael Fassbender doesn't radiate. Like, no one wants to be friends with Michael Fassbender in any movie that he's ever been in, right? Like, he always kind of exudes this very chilly, very sort of cerebral. All of those things, by the way, obviously part of Steve Jobs' character, but also makes the movie really hard to fully connect with. Plus, like, he's, you know, anyway. All that being said, I actually don't think that Noah Wiley's performance is bad, per se. I just think it's not, there's just not a lot of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, he didn't have a lot of performance in it.
Noah.
Yeah. he kind of looks like Steve Jobs too, but
he actually looked for the first half of the movie like Bo Burnham. Every time he sort of turned to the side and you could only see like the long hair and the beard. I was like, that's Bo Burnham
from inside. Yeah, for sure.
Bo Burnham and Amanda Seyfried could remake those scenes shot for shot.
Yeah, that actress looked so much like Amanda Seyfried. It was crazy.
Yeah
it's interesting because I don't know if you read about how, I guess as like a joke around the time that this came out, Steve Jobs brought out Noah Wiley for a presentation and had Noah Wiley pretend to be him.
Oh no, I didn't read about that. That's so funny.
Which I think is kind of great, which shows more ability to laugh at himself than we ever really knew he was capable of, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates is nowhere to be found. I don't think he probably liked the performance by Anthony Michael Hall, who literally feels like a poor man's Riddler in this movie.
With the glasses and everything.
It was like, what are we doing here? I don't know. It's just, on top of everything else, is kind of muddy at really explaining the feud between the two of them. Like, right?
I didn't know that it was two different groups of people until about 20 minutes in. I just thought it was like, because there was always a blonde one and a brown haired one. And I'm just thinking, like, I guess every couple of guys is a blonde guy and a brown haired guy.
I get that. That's
and like every time I was like, are we time jumping? Like, what's... And then I figured out, oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
There's another pair of guys here.
It's what's interesting about, and it's perhaps, I would argue, I mean, they don't really know what the most interesting thing about their conflict between Steve and Bill is. But what is sort of compelling is that Bill Gates, for all intents and purposes, was the underdog in this scenario. That the success was, the wind was entirely at Steve Jobs' back. The fucked up part and the kind of quote unquote Greek tragedy, if you will, of this is when Bill Gates essentially steals the Apple OS and turns it into Windows and then makes $1 billion. And Steve Jobs, for good or bad, being sort of digging in his heels in what he felt was important about his company, which was that they couldn't be cloned, that they could never be, you know, you couldn't augment the insides of them, couldn't do anything to them. They were, as he said, a closed unit, made it harder for them to capitalize in the marketplace. So it's just one of those things where, like, the final kind of scene they have when he's like, we make better shit than you. And Bill Gates is like, you don't get it. No one fucking cares. And that just makes me kind of laugh now, because like clearly everyone did care eventually. It just took time to get there. It is an interesting moment in history that is not particularly well laid out in this. What did you think about the sort of fucking documentary VO bullshit, like the structure of it?
I did not like that. I thought I don't like that shit anyway.
Yeah.
But especially in this, especially since like it kind of, they stop doing it for a good portion of the movie. Like they do it a bunch at the beginning and then they just stop.
Yep.
And then it comes back at the end when they do the weird like Hitchcock zoom reverse on the guy. And he's like, and now he teaches computers to children. And you're like, what did I just see? What is that? That part I thought was not necessarily like, it was almost, it felt to me like, one of those, oh God, have you ever seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
I don't know what that is, no.
Okay, the real nerdy crowds are going to be pumping their fists in the air when they hear me say that. But it's a like British comedy show that's, the premise of the show is that it is a revisitation of an old show from like the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like a supernatural TV series set inside a hospital.
Okay.
But the show in reality is a show like with talking heads of like the actors who were in the show talking about the making of the show, which is not real,
right?
But you see it in the flashbacks from when they're talking about it. It's great. It's the best thing ever. It's very funny.
Feels kind of Chris Guest-esque.
Yeah, yeah. And this gave me vibes of that. so intensely that I was like, when, like, is this a joke or is this just straight up the movie? And it's just straight up the movie.
Straight up the movie. It's, you know, there's, there are two specific moments that I was kind of, I felt bad for them because the technology wasn't there for them to be able to do what they wanted to do, or they just didn't have the budget to do what they wanted to do. I think it's probably more the latter. There's a moment, a sort of fulcrum point, when Bill Gates sells his, for at the moment, non-existent operating system to IBM. And this, and the shot freezes, and one of his buddies, the super annoying guy, literally like walks out of the frame, and it turns into like an actual frame.
That I, what was that? That was John DiMaggio, by the way, which is very funny to see his face because he's a voice actor. And I know him from like all the cartoons that I would watch as a child. And I saw his name in the credits of this. It's like, oh my God, okay, this is going to be weird. He's playing the weirdest character in the whole movie.
He's a cartoon character. More so than anybody else in this movie.
Yeah, that scene where they're like, he's like, we should frame this meeting.
And put it in the fucking Guggenheim as art, this moment when like, and again, like it's so poorly rendered. That you kind of
put his chair back in and there's like no shadow beneath like, the lens,
and he just it is so painful to look at that I've, on top of the fact that I generally hate fucking fourth wall breakage in general, I don't love when people talk to the camera, I don't really want to be acknowledged more times than not as an audience, it just takes me out of it, but then to double down on taking me out of it with a special effect thing that was so horrific to look at. And then later you had Wozniak inside the computer screen, like pointing at icons. I was just like, what the fuck is this?
I felt like I was watching something that was like made for children to watch in school. Like it felt like the Mr. DNA part of Jurassic Park.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely felt like that. It is unfortunate because I think that like, I mean, listen, you and I could obviously do a better job writing this script, I think, in a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't feel like they took the time to really like it truly felt like they went through the book, they highlighted the stuff that they wanted, and then it just feels so first drafty in terms of like just the actual dialogue itself is so expositional. There's very little life or any sort of like character in it.
Yeah.
I still don't feel as though I know any more now about the motives of Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. I'll say this, though. There's a scene when the guy from Intel comes and offers Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak like $250,000 when they're living in the, when they're basically working out of the garage together.
Right.
And Steve Jobs is kind of talking a little bit there about, kind of the Steve Jobs manifesto, if you will, which is because like Steve Jobs, for all intents and purposes, everyone kind of makes fun of him because like he wasn't really the tech guy. Like he couldn't actually build anything really. Mm-hmm. He was the idea guy. He was the like, he was the P.T. Barnum, right? He's the guy who like puts on the show and whatever.
He's the Lee Pace in Halt and Catch Fire guy.
He is that. And hearing sort of his dogma come out of his lips about sort of art and business and and commerce and how this computer is going to revolutionize all of that, and that this is people are going to have a piece of art in their homes. I mean, it's in the movie as well, like it's in the Steve Jobs film as well, talking about like how important the aesthetics were and that it felt like this really beautiful thing, so it was worth twice as much money as all other fucking computers. And I think there's something very compelling about all of that, the sort of opportunity to overthrow the gods, quote unquote. Like he really saw himself as this revolutionary, right? Like this person, this anti-establishmentarian.
Yeah. It's disruptor culture.
Yeah.
Which I think is maybe another reason why I didn't really like it, because like now we know that disruptors are bad. Everything about this movie that was in any way like tech bro-y, like again, like the party on the beach where he's like throwing frisbees at all those guys, the guys who, and I don't know if this was just because it was the 90s or if they like cast people who looked like this for some reason, but they all looked like people that you just want to punch in the face.
100%.
And so everything that was like that, which is the part of the movie, I was just like, this is very distasteful. I don't like looking at it.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, like, this is just such a weird time capsule thing, too. Because, like, if you watch this, and if you've seen, I don't know, an episode of the show Silicon Valley, you'll just be like, fuck all of these people and fuck all of this. I mean, or if you've read any of just the terrible kind of tech bro culture that exists in Silicon Valley and the way that it treats basically women across the board, but then any number of other sort of, it's just, it's a really gross incel thing. You know what I mean? These guys that felt, again, it's the geeks inheriting the world, except it's like they felt unappreciated and, you know, it's women didn't, you know, want to be with them.
It's the people who like, who are on the top and they think that they're still on the bottom. Like, it's that sort of self-conscious, like, I have to prove that I'm, you know, that I have to prove that I'm the Chad amongst the virgins.
Yeah.
And it's annoying. It is very funny to watch this now when I think if this exact thing was made now, they would bend over backwards to try to do the opposite thing.
Absolutely.
And try to be like, all these people are bad.
If this movie was made today, I mean, this is part of why I think that the Steve Jobs film is also interesting, because it does feel as though, I mean, Steve Jobs just come, it's 2017? Is that when that comes out? I think it is, right?
Sounds right, yeah.
You know, so a few years ago now. But the Steve Jobs movie is really trying to kind of come at him anyway, with a much more sort of dealing with his adoption, dealing with his birth parents, which this movie has one line about his birth mother, and then that's the only time that they even talk about it. Where it's a big part of the movie, just parenthood in general is a big part of the movie. His daughter, his parents, feeling as though you've been, you know, neglected in some way, feeling as though it's just a lot more human. Like that script in that movie is trying desperately to humanize basically a fucking android. And I think that this movie isn't trying to do any of that, really. Like, it's just sort of, but to your point, if it was made today, and by the way, I wouldn't put it past someone to, Ryan Murphy should do another season of Feud and just make it about these two, which so I watched the shit out of.
High right? Camp, like, that'd be Jobs great. Versus Microsoft.
Wouldn't you watch that shit?
Yeah, I would watch the shit out of that.
I mean, it'd be amazing. So, like, there's a part of me, and that's kind of why I was a little excited to do this movie, because, first of all, we haven't done many TV movies because there just isn't a ton of need to do it, quite honestly. But I wanted to do this one because I felt like it'd be interesting to see it through the lens of not just technologically where we are today, but, like, you know, sociopolitically. These guys are just fucking... That whole world now is so gross. I don't even know how anyone works in that industry, but
it's interesting how we've turned so far around on it, because I think, like, you know, obviously I'm a little baby, but back then I'm sure there was a lot of stuff like this. It was like, these great men with ideas are so wonderful. And now we're like, you know, every piece of media about that is like, if you're a great man, there's some fucking shit.
Yep. You've done some shit. To be great.
Don't like.
Yeah. We're gonna find it out and we're gonna fuck. Yeah.
It's gonna put it in the show.
Yeah, I do think that I mean, Jesus, wasn't Bill Gates associated with what's his face? Jeffrey
Epstein. God.
So there's that.
That'd be a piece to write about this movie. Why wasn't Jeffrey Epstein in The Pirates of Silicon Valley?
That'd be in the review if it came out today. Where is the Jeffrey Epstein part? I mean, Bill Gates is, I think, a much more complicated guy than this movie gives credence to as well. Like, this movie is a lot more interested in the Steve Jobs of it all because it wants to kind of... I mean, he's honestly the more charismatic and more interesting and and seems to have more sort of grandiose notions of what he's trying to do. Bill Gates just wanted to get rich, it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe late, kind of hard to say.
Maybe he's still a virgin. You don't know.
Oh my God. we don't know. Melinda might know, but I don't know. they got divorced, right? Am I crazy? They got divorced?
I think so. I think I remember reading some headline about that and being like, what are they going to do about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? Like the name.
Right. A foundation, which, by the way, like did some pretty great stuff, has done some pretty great stuff, but probably because of her and not him is my guess. But I do think it's interesting because the only reason I wonder if they got divorced was because, I mean, there couldn't have been a prenup there.
She finally saw this movie and was like, oh, my God. Who did,
you did
I marry?
What?
I married the villain of the movie.
Yeah, I married like Iago. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know all there is to know about the players in this film, but what I do know,
and we did not learn much about them watching this.
No.
I still don't really know how. I don't know. I don't know anything about the computer stuff in this. There was some scene where he was like trying to sell the computer, and then they were like, he hated it, and everyone was cheering. I was like, why aren't they happy about that? I guess I missed something.
So yeah. That was just to give an explanation to that specific thing. Essentially, Steve Wozniak, who's played by Joey Plotnick in this, had a deal with Hewlett Packard because he worked for them, which meant that anything that he made, they needed to own. So fucking Steve Jobs is like, well, now you got to show him this thing. And if he wants it, he's going to own it. And then they were happy that he didn't want it because he's an idiot. Like that scene was just ridiculous. Where he's like, why would anyone want a personal computer? See, part of the problem here is that like, you're absolutely right that we don't know anything about the technology because the movie's not interested in trying to explain it to us either. Like, the impression I get is they're like, only fucking nerds are going to understand this shit. So we just got to like, you know, breeze past it. So it sucks. So you don't know anything. You don't understand what they're doing.
No. Yeah. And I think the other big thing was like the OS stuff. I was just like, can't. I don't know. I'll just take your word for it. Whatever you say.
Wait,
I don't even know how my phone works. I just truly, they're like, update this. I'm like, okay.
I don't know much about this shit either, quite honestly. But I do remember someone many years ago talking with a friend or something about the Windows OS situation, which was, you're looking at me like,
I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready to try to.
So you know what DOS is, right? Although that's way before me. Okay. So way back in the day, okay, before you were born, when you weren't even glimmer in your mother's in the 1920s when I was in high school. there used to be a time where there were no icons to click on. You had a black screen and you had literally lines of code. You had like a C prompt and you had to type in shit in order to run programs as opposed to clicking on an icon. Are you with me so far? Yeah, your mind was just blown. If you have our Patreon, you can see the steam coming out of Evan's ears right now. So that was DOS. That was how shit ran. When you wanted to fucking run a game or a program, you had to type in the fucking program at like exe to run the program, and then it would start running the program.
Honestly, this sounds so much cooler. Like, I would feel like a hacker if I had to do this on like my MacBook Air.
Yeah, you'd be like Lisbeth Salander. It'd be fucking awesome. I mean, if you've seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, whenever she's in the code of it, whenever she's like, that's her running fucking shit without the icons, without any of that stuff. Like, she's just inside the actual programs themselves.
She's in the computer.
Yeah, she's in the Matrix.
That's cool.
So all of this is to say that Steve Jobs, in his brilliance, was like, get rid of all this code shit. No one wants that. They want to see fucking pretty pictures they can click on with a mouse. And everyone's like, what the fuck's a mouse? Why the fuck would we do any of this? Right? And then he did it, and then fucking Bill Gates was like, I'm gonna steal your fucking pretty pictures and your little icons and tweak it just enough in order to make Windows, which is what every IBM Microsoft program runs on now.
Now I understand. I understand that after the 2 minutes it took for you to explain it.
The movie does a terrible job explaining that. Yeah. It's all of this is to say that, and it did, obviously, history caught up, and Steve Jobs was proven to be, if nothing else, a very good showman, a guy who understood, you know, what people wanted, what they wanted aesthetically, how to make things easy. And for that, he should be, obviously, you know, that's why everyone thinks he's brilliant. But at the time, people just wanted to make as much money as they possibly could. And it didn't seem as though Steve Jobs had the same goals in terms of the monetary, which is why, you know, he kind of got hosed by Bill Gates for a while. Okay. And there is something fucked up about the fact that this film ends, ironically, if you will, this film ends about halfway through the Steve Jobs film.
Yes. Yes.
Because
that
there's
was
a
the
moment.
Other thing I kept thinking.
So, like, there's a moment in Steve Jobs' life where he's fired from Apple. He's basically, they tell him to go fuck himself. Mm. He builds his own computer, which is a disaster, in order to get Apple to buy that computer to then become part of Apple again, which is how he sort of, it's how he sort of gets back in with Apple. And that's when, if I'm not mistaken, Bill Gates invests money in Apple. Or it might, at some point or another, Bill Gates invests money in Apple. And that's how you get the very end of this movie, the final bit of this movie, where everyone's like, the huzzah moment, where like Bill Gates owns a part of Apple now, which sucks because they were just in such financial distress. He basically saved them. Mm-hmm. But little did he know that he'd be, you know, foisted by his own petard. But that's, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I guess ultimately, maybe the joke's on us. He's still making money off Apple. So I guess ultimately, you know, it's what it is. But
yeah, seems like he's doing fine.
Except for, you know, kind of being a pariah now and no one wanting anything to do with them. But, you know, these are fascinating guys. And I do think that someone at some point should do a proper deep dive into their history, their kind of complex, weird, competitive, what have you.
Yeah. And it should be Ryan Murphy. It should be a feud series.
What are we doing?
Free idea.
When are we pitching it, Emma?
Yeah.
I think that it is unfortunate that we got such a cursory thing here. I want to talk for a second about the Lisa stuff.
Okay.
The daughter.
Yeah.
You with me so far?
Vaguely remember this.
Well, but it's a much, much bigger part of the movie, right?
Yeah.
The Sorkin film. So Sorkin has been on the record saying, you know, he reads this doorstop of a book that Walter Jacobson wrote. I think it's like 600 or 700 pages. Like, it's just a beast of a book about Steve Jobs. He's reading the book and he doesn't really know what's the arc, like what's the motivating thing, what's the thing that I can use as the kind of bridge between these three acts. And ultimately, he realizes that it's a relationship with the daughter, which is, you know, listen, old as. You know, time, and it works. And I do think it works in the film. Part of it is because, you know, Steve Jobs and dealing with his whole not knowing who he really is, not knowing who his birth parents are, and then he figures out who his birth parents are. I think part of it is just sort of, it's an identity thing. He eventually gets over all this and he does marry someone and he does have a family and, you know, whatever. But the film doesn't really get into all that. This doesn't do anything with it.
There's like one scene where, what is the Amanda woman's name? What is her name?
Well, her real name is Chris Ann Brennan.
Okay.
And it's Arlene in this because I guess they didn't want to be sued.
You have to get off the table. Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He's not going to get off the table.
I feel like Seb should just be on the episode at this point. Just bring him on. There he is.
Evil little.
He just
Jawa
fucking
eyes.
Dead-eyed right down the lens and was like, "Fuck you."
Yeah, I can't control him. What was I saying? Oh, it was when they're like walking down the street or something, and she has some line that's like, "You don't know who you are," and I was sitting there like, "This is
bad.
I don't like this."
Yeah,
why are
I mean,
doing it like this?
She's played in the film or in the Danny Boyle movie by, why am I drawing a blank on her name? Catherine Watterson plays her in that film. And she's great, but she's also played pretty manically as though she was sort of this unstable person in his life. In this, she's kind of a non-character. Like, she doesn't really have anything to, she doesn't do anything other
she's
than
just
like
a shrew. She's the woman who's what are you doing, you know? Oh, I'm gonna get pregnant and make that a problem for you.
It does feel as though God, when you say that, I think of how often that is a thing in movies and television. It's really upsetting to think about.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, well, what can she do to just, she can get pregnant. That'll fuck up his life, I guess. It's so lazy.
Every great man's worst fear. Paying child support.
Having responsibilities. Yeah, no, it is interesting how often that seems to be the, like, I mean, listen, I love a good, like, surprise pregnancy as much as the next guy when it comes to, like, what, not in real life. I mean, in art,
fiction.
In fiction. Because I do think that, I mean, are you watching For All Mankind by any chance?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that's, without spoiling anything for people that maybe don't, like, that was a great, oh, shit, I can't believe she's pregnant moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, good stuff can come from that as a plot point. But if you're not going to actually do anything with it, which I feel like this isn't interested in doing either. Like, he names the computer after Lisa, but then, like, the Lisa's a failure. And then no one wants to talk about the Lisa anymore. It's like, what? Why did we do this? It's just very strange to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all very odd. I do feel like so there's a couple other things. So Wozniak in the Sorkin movie is played by Seth Rogen.
Yes. That's mainly why I think that movie is hilarious. But only because he's very good. Exactly. I'm like, how is this happening? Yeah. Like, how are you being a compelling like characterization of this person? And he totally does it.
I'm gonna say something right now that might seem kind of crazy. Maybe not. It's not that crazy, I guess, but whatever. So I just rewatched Weirdly, kind of went on like a Seth Rogen binge over the past few days, where I watched a bunch of, we did Funny People on the Patreon for 2009, which I actually think is a, you've never seen Funny People?
I know. Yeah, I know. Everyone's sort of surprised by that.
I'd be interested to hear what you think of Funny People, but he's quite good in it. It was probably the first time, I think, that he tried to stretch those muscles in terms of showing, like, maybe there's more to me than you think. And then I think I watched 50-50 again, which I love, and he's really fucking good in that movie.
The movie is good. Yeah, he's good in
Long Shot. He's really fucking good in Long Shot.
Another one I never saw.
Oh, you need to watch Long Shot. You would love Long Shot.
Okay.
You would legitimately love Long Shot. It is fucking great.
I feel like before that came out, everyone was like, oh God. And then it came out and they were like, it's actually kind of good. And I just skipped it.
First of all, it was released in May, which is it just got steamrolled in the summer. Like that movie needed to come out in like fucking March or October. Like it couldn't be in a competitive, but Charlize Theron is unbelievably funny. And it's a really funny, it's one of the best romantic comedies maybe ever, in my opinion. It's great.
Wow.
Watch Long Shot. And then with Steve Jobs, I'm going to go out on a limb. I think Seth Rogen gets a Best Supporting Actor nomination for The Fabelman, sight unseen. I could see that.
Okay.
That's my hot take. I haven't even seen what he looks like in the movie. But I think that if anyone's going to get him there as an actor, it's probably going to be Steven Spielberg. It's
Steven Spielberg, yeah.
Like, and I think that Rogan has it in him. Like, I think he's shown that he has I think he's got chops.
Yes. And I think Seb thinks so as well.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you can hear him screaming in the background, but he's been yelling off and on this entire episode. Okay, great.
We can't hear any of him. I just think Seth Rogen's one of those guys. Not only has he built an empire for himself, which you got to hand it to him. Like, 15 years ago would not have thought that was a guy who was going to figure out a way to, like, you know what I mean? He's had some spotty runs in his filmography where, like, big movies that don't perform and what have you. And
yeah. And he was sort of like a type for way too long, mm-hmm. I think, for him to have kept doing that. But yeah, I do agree. I think he is really, really good. And I think there are certain movies where you can really see it. And
I think Steve Jobs is one of those movies. And to your point, he is still Seth Rogen. He's still funny and he's still very warm and human. But like, he's doing a lot of stuff in that movie that I really respect. And it's why, like, watching Joey Plotnick in this, you're just like, Plotnick, Slotnick, whatever. He's fine, but like, I don't know.
He's just sort of playing. Yeah. I mean, they're all playing like sort of tropey types. Mm-hmm. Like, he's playing the nerdy little friend. Like, they have that scene at the dinner, whatever dinner party it was, where he's like, I don't know how to talk to people. Yeah. And Steve is like, I have to talk on the phone. And they have an argument about it. And yeah, it's just sort of like, okay, I've seen this guy before a million times.
It's so unfortunate that it feels like, rather than reading this book, the writers, whoever adapted the screenplay, read the book and was just like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm just going to literally lay every stereotype we have or preconceived notion about the computer industry and all that shit on top of this, and that'll be that. Like, it just didn't feel like anyone put the time and the effort into actually trying.
Yeah. No, but it's a very uninteresting look at this thing that happened. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm sure you read about this stuff too, where like, oh wow.
Throwing things on the floor now. That's fine.
What's going on?
I don't know what is wrong with him.
He's just like, he's fucking pissed today.
He's being terrible. Why? And he always does it when I have to A, be on a recording, and B, be on video so that everyone can see that I'm like.
I love that he knows it though. I love that he's just like, oh, she's.
He gets so worked up. Even when I talk to my parents, he's like, I have to do bad things now because she's talking and she's not talking to me.
That's what this is. It's a good thing he's not codependent.
Yeah. Thank God.
So I'm sure you read about this, the talk of some sort of a Social Network sequel that follows the fall from grace that company has had over the last, let's say, 10 years, I guess, basically. Too social, too network. That would, by the way, would watch. I would watch it, obviously. And I do think that if Sorkin and Fincher decided to do it, it'd be fucking awesome, right? Like, if they got all the players back.
Yeah.
And they literally showed how the 2016 election essentially ruined that platform. There's an interesting story there.
they definitely have to spend a lot of time on the horror image, the cursed image.
Oh, of him in the with the suntan lotion on?
In the sunscreen surfing or whatever he's doing.
Do you know what he looks like? Did you see did you ever see I'm sure you did, Star Trek Into Darkness?
Yeah.
The beginning, the aliens from the beginning?
Oh my god. No, it's horrible. That's one of those, like, the picture of
you can't, like, it's almost as bad as the recent pictures of Elon Musk on that yacht.
Oh wow. it's bad to see tech guys in that setting. I don't want to see it. They belong at the computer inside.
No windows.
No.
I
need to be making
really
their little programs and tweeting. That's fine, but that's it.
I agree. I really do agree that these guys, I mean, listen, Silicon Valley seemed at the television show was its own problematic situation, it sounds like, with at least two of the actors being deeply problematic. I don't actually think that Mike Judge or any of the writers or directors, but all that being said, one of the reasons that show is so brilliant is because it just takes the piss out of all of those fucking idiots out there.
Yes.
And I mean, I would say that if I had one problem with it, and I don't know that I ever actually finished it. I think I got through most of it though. So I never saw how it actually ended, but like, they needed far more women on it. Now, I know there's not a lot of women in the industry, but I think the female characters in that show weren't as sort of, there weren't enough of them.
We need more women, female tech villains. That's what we need.
Why haven't you written that show, Emma? What are you doing?
We need the gender flipped Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess that was essentially what Halt and Catch Fire turned into, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Which I never finished it, so.
I don't think I did either.
It got away from me a little bit, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's off Netflix, so it's gone forever.
Is it off Netflix?
I think so.
Oh, it's on AMC Plus now, I guess, or whatever the fuck that is.
Streaming service everybody loves, AMC Plus.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know. It's all really interesting. And the other thing that I was thinking about with this movie is I couldn't help but think about what's now sort of happened, the convergence of Silicon Valley with television, right? So your Amazons, your Apples, your Netflixes, all of that now has seeped into, obviously, with streaming services, how that plays into everything too. You know, there's obviously been innumerable think pieces about Netflix and where they are now and why they are where they are. And I do think that so much of it has to do with the fact that, like, you can't run a network like a Silicon Valley company. It doesn't work.
Mm-mm.
Like, you actually do. That's why, like, Apple's winning, quote unquote, winning in terms of up against Amazon and Netflix, because they hired a bunch of fucking TV executives and they said, like, make some television. You know, and
they keep making more of the things that they have. Like, that's the other thing is that, like, once something is on Apple TV, it's sort of guaranteed to keep going. Like Servant, the M. Night Shyamalan thing, which I do watch and I do like.
Of course you do.
It's weird as shit, and I can't say that I recommend it to anybody, but I do like it. It's gonna have another season.
Is Lauren Ambrose still on it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
She's awesome.
She is. Okay. Full disclosure, watched the entire first season of Servant and was like, this show's bananas. I'm in. Right. And then the finale was such a wet fart of season one that I was like, I can't do it.
They tried to do like a twist.
They fucked it up. And I was just like, I can't go back now.
They do that every time. Like every finale is like a new thing where you're like, I still don't know what it's about. Like, that's the thing. When people ask me, like, what's Servant about? I'm like, they haven't said yet. Three seasons in.
That's incredible. I mean, if someone asked me what it was about, I'd say a fake baby.
It's about a fake baby, yeah. And a family that's slowly going insane because of a weird girl that keeps getting into their house.
But Lauren Ambrose is great. I'm a big fan of Lauren Ambrose. Love her. She's great. I to your point, Apple has smartly said, we're going to make less stuff, but it's all hopefully going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to making lots of stuff that's not very good. But, you know, listen, I'm not sitting here shitting on Netflix. I think they do. I mean, I haven't seen Sandman. People seem to really like Sandman. Oh, boy. Not one on the other side of this conversation.
I mean, I'm just tired of all that shit.
Interesting.
Like, and also I've been
reading the Sandman comics. Yeah, that's what I mean.
And the comics are incredible.
Right.
And just the fact that like they're going to take that and be like, let's make something that's like not as good and looks sort of bad visually. Like, why? Just don't do it.
You know, no, you're not wrong. Listen, I haven't watched it, so I can't speak to it. But I'll just say this. I do think that it's emblematic of they've been trying to make Sandman forever, as you very well know, right? They've been trying to do it as features. They almost did it as an HBO show. Like, ultimately, it became clear that, like, it's going to be a television show. It's not going to be a movie series. And then Warner Brothers is just asking for so much money in order to make it properly that I think that, I don't know. It just seems tricky.
The thing about the show is that the writing and the acting is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that that's what people have been saying about it mostly. Yeah. But I don't know why they made it look the way they made it look, but it's not working. I don't understand. Well, they did something like, you know how, okay, I recently learned how an anamorphic lens works, where it sort of stretches the image because the thing is so big. It does the opposite. It's like, it is a letterbox, like widescreen shot thing, but it's like stretched out. Like I look like, or no, it's not stretched out. It's compressed. Here's Seb again.
It's
compressed.
Yeah.
So everything sort of looks like vertically stretched.
Do you think this is intentional, correct?
It is completely intentional. Like the whole show looks like this.
Can I ask you a question? Because I have not watched the show.
Okay.
I intend on watching it. I have two close friends who are writers on it, so I'm certain
they did a great job. I will say, else, you know.
No problem with the writing. Full disclosure. I have technically three friends. My question to you is this, because conceptually, this is everyone's favorite episode about the Sandman television show. The comics, graphic novel, I've only read the first issue of. Okay. I quite liked it. The first trade. Yes. But it also seems impossible to make because of how intangible it is. I mean, like the whole world is about dreams.
Yeah.
So making that have stakes is very fucking hard.
And when you try to apply like three-dimensional physical rules to that, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Which I think is why the worst part of the show for me is the visual stuff.
Right.
It's just like, you know, there's so much ephemeral things in the comic. And then when you just put that on screen as like a person in a costume, you're just like, that's a person in a costume. I'm not looking at the thing it's supposed to be.
I will say this though. I posted an article yesterday that I read in The Guardian where they were just like, is this going to start a whole new wave of goths? And I was just like,
I hope
everyone starts dressing up like fucking Morpheus. That sounds great.
That would be the best outcome to this.
I literally was like, nothing would make me happier than to see goths have a comeback because of Sandman. But I mean, it's tough. I all this is to say, the confluence of sort of tech bro Silicon Valley infusion into television has not been great. It also hasn't been great when it comes to social media. It really hasn't been great in a whole myriad of ways. Do you think that that is just because of the fact that they're beholden to stockholders? Do you think that's because inevitably as a species, we ruin everything good?
well,
a bit of both perhaps.
I do think that it is it is a problem mainly because the people at the top are not people who understand how storytelling works. You get these people who are just like, you know, certain people who have been in the news recently, whose names I will not say, who just don't really seem to understand why people like to watch TV or watch movies. Or just like, you know, they look at something and it's like all they're really looking at day to day is spreadsheets of numbers and information. It's not, they're not really engaging with the product. Like, yeah. I don't believe any of these people have like a favorite show that their company made. Like, it, you know, it's just not, I don't trust anyone like that to run any company like this, which is why whenever I refer to streaming services, I always call them tech companies, which sometimes makes people mad, but it is true. Like,
I mean, yeah. No, I think that you're making a really valid point, because I think that, and this is something that I've grappled with since I was in film school, quite frankly. And that's the sort of having to come to grips with the idea of the business that is making this stuff, right? Mm. Now, I don't think it needs to be binary, and I'm certainly not, I don't want to make it seem that way, but, you know, the idea that an artistic endeavor can be lucrative and also creatively rewarding is incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah.
And when push comes to shove, all of your artistic integrity means not a fucking thing to stockholders, right? Which is, they want the company to make money. And if the stuff that you make, people love it and keep paying for it and buying it, everyone wins, right? Like, that's the way that they see it. You know, to allude to the current or most recent fiasco that was just foisted upon us, the whole HBO Max fiasco, I do think that I don't agree with the person in charge by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that when everything is said and done, I imagine that it's all going to kind of work out in the wash. I think that, you know, there's going to be a significant infusion of the 90-day fiance universe, as they said on their fucking
as a woman, I love to lean back and enjoy genre dems.
Yeah. I mean, when people ask me about you, that's what I tell them.
Those are the two things that anyone knows about me.
Emma, no one leans back harder than Emma, and no one loves genre dem. Yeah, crazy.
As a female skew, these are the two facts about me.
Here's the salient point that I think is worth noting from the shit show that happened last week is the almost 20% drop in their stocks. That's the only thing that's going to fucking matter to anybody. And that's why I think that when everything is said and done, you know, some sort of a balance is going to be found, because otherwise they're just alienating a very, very large group of people.
I think that we've been in the middle of like an extremely transitional period where like all the stuff is extremely new, and yet everyone is trying as fast as they can to make the most of whatever they're making off of it, whether that's money or whether that's actually making TV and film the streaming era. Mm-hmm. That like it's all just compounded into this huge thing that now we all have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I do think that hopefully HBO Max turning around and looking at what they've been doing and I think rightly realizing that less is in fact more, and putting films in theaters is in fact a good idea, and keeping them there for a while instead of just being like, and now you can watch it at home, is
that's
a
the
net
one good thing the new president has said.
Yeah. And like, and also just, you know, getting rid of stuff that's on a streaming service is weird. Like, just sort of so making weird. It go away like that is really weird. But also the fact that they are kind of thinking in the same way that I think Netflix is now thinking, that maybe we should stop just making all this bullshit and concentrate on doing things that are good.
No one's been able to really explain to me the cost benefit of removing Mrs. Fletcher from HBO Max. Now, people are claiming it's a residuals thing. Let me just tell you.
Isn't it a tax thing? They can claim that as a loss on their.
I don't. Here,
again,
here's what,
like,
here's what,
Microsoft, whatever. I don't OS, understand how it works.
No, I'm the only reason I bring it up is because there's a part of me that's like, one of the incentives to being the HBO streaming service is that you have access to all the HBO shows.
Exactly.
So it's just painfully stupid to start to save peanuts in the greater scheme of things because you've decided to remove Here and Now from your streaming service. I mean, listen, I don't think a lot of people are watching Here and Now, so I'm not, you know what I mean? And I understand their feelings of like, why put it on there if no one's watching it? It's like, well, you made it.
Yeah.
So this... can at least give people access to it.
Who cares? Yeah.
I find the whole thing very strange. I don't really know how it's all supposed to work, but you're not wrong. I think everyone needs to be making less content, but good content. Make better content.
Yeah. Or you get the situation where you're like Netflix and you're like, the only way to get people to increase everything every month, which is impossible, really. Like, you're going to hit a plateau eventually.
Yeah.
Is to just make more stuff. No one's asking for that. Like that one summer, this was a few years ago, but there was one, like, I don't know, January, February, where they're like, they announced for the first time a new Netflix movie every Friday, every week, the whole year. And everyone was just sort of like, we don't want that.
No one asked for that.
No, don't do that.
it is, you know, the technology thing. I mean, listen, I don't know what to make of a lot of the social media stuff genuinely. I mean, I'm never really on Facebook anymore. I'm probably on Twitter far too much. I'm on Instagram here and there. But I do feel as though we're being played, right? Like, they're looking at all this stuff and they know what we're looking at. They know it's all kind of icky.
We're doing advertisements for free, essentially. If you're on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And they're selling your data to all these companies. Did you see the thing I think it was Facebook. Facebook lost like billions of dollars because of that Apple, the thing that's on everyone's iPhones. It's like, you can opt out of this. And everyone's like, yes, I want to. That sounds creepy.
Yeah.
I don't want that. And they lost a ton of money. Which really just shows you like, this is how they're making their money, is by doing creepy shit.
Which does all kind of come back. I mean, it weirdly all comes back to this movie, at least the people that are in this movie.
It all
movie.
Comes back to the Pirates of Silicon Valley.
But it kind of does in a fucked up way. And I only say that just in the sense that I can't help but look at what I'm going to focus on Steve Jobs because the Bill Gates of it all, whatever, fuck it. But like what Steve Jobs, his whole thing was about, how do I get you to personally care and love about this piece of technology, be it the software, whatever it was, because he knew that if he could create a vessel for all the things that you love, your music, your movies, the internet, whatever it is, then you would love this thing. And that in and of itself isn't necessarily evil, but it's been weaponized and it's been turned into something really gross.
It is a notion that is very pure.
Yeah.
That is extremely easy to corrupt. Because now there's like, well, if you love something, then you don't want to lose it. You don't want anything to happen to it. But but you have to, you know, give in to the demands of the people who control the thing. Yeah.
It is tricky. It is. I mean, I think that Apple as a company, you know, certainly post Steve Jobs' death has changed a little bit. I don't know that Tim Cook obviously is the visionary that Steve Jobs was. I think that there's been a fair amount of repetition in terms of what they've been making.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a new iPhone every year, but that iPhone ain't changing much. It still seems to be kind of the same thing.
Becoming slightly different shapes, so you have to buy a new case.
Right.
They actually, in Europe, they passed this thing recently where like they can't manufacture different chargers.
Oh.
Past a certain point, because now, like, you know, you get a phone and you have to have the lightning port, like it doesn't work with anything else. I tried to charge my computer at my friend's apartment a few weeks ago, and I have a charger port that's slightly older than the one that everyone uses now, and the thing that it wouldn't fit, it was like that much off.
This is so evil.
But in Europe, they passed a law that was like, you can't do that now. And Apple's upset because now they can't, you know, sell all the new accoutrement whenever anyone buys a new piece of technology.
It's, I mean, I got an Apple computer. I've got all the Apple shit. It's, yeah. It's not that I'm not a fan of their stuff, but I do feel as though they might be hitting their head on the ceiling when it comes to at least the computer world, right? Like they keep threatening to make I'm sure they'll make a car someday, and that would open them up into an entirely new market. Made an electric car and they got into that space, I mean, that could be gigantic if they were to actually do something like that. But again, like, or the TV space where like they actually physically make television sets, like there's just stuff that they could be doing. Because I do feel as though we're kind of seeing the same shit come from them at this point. But
now you can get an iPhone that's a darker green than you could get before.
It's true. It's true.
That's innovation.
My roommate bought it. Yeah.
Looks kind of cool. I saw it. I was like, ooh, I like that color.
Yeah,
see, it's weird little like baby lizard brain where they're like a new color, and you're like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's all bad, but it is just, you know, again, this movie's not good. We'll rate this movie in a second, and I'll let you go back to your life. But I'll just say that as bad as this movie is, it is a bit of a kind of lightning in a bottle moment. Like it does sort of. It doesn't do it well, but it encapsulates sort of this odd little moment. I mean, I think the Steve Jobs film is much better. I think Social Network and both those films do a much better job of really kind of getting into the guts of these morally questionable individuals and the choice that they made and what have you. But I don't know. I mean, listen, you were how old in 1999?
I was 7.
Right. Okay. So
I would not have watched this on TNT.
No, of course not. But did you have an iMac? Did your parents were did that
I
ever?
I didn't have a computer. Okay. I mean, we had like a home computer. God, what did we have? We had
like a Compaq or something.
We had
like
a few desktops because my mom worked from home.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at that point they were all Windows based. Yeah, I don't remember the black screen stuff.
No, that's that's way before you.
Okay.
The black screen stuff is the best fucking way of describing DOS I've ever heard.
The stuff, the no pictures stuff. I want the pictures.
I mean, so do you remember when my first computer was, do you remember the candy colored iMacs that you could get that were sort of round?
Yeah, those cute little guys. Yeah, one of my friends had one.
I had one of those.
Yeah. I wanted one of those so badly.
That was when they broke through, at least for me. That was when everyone wanted that computer. And then when the iPod came out, everyone fucking wanted an iPod. Like that was when I felt like Apple really broke through, at least in my bubble. I'm sure they had broken through with other people far earlier than that. But
well, it was making something that is very easy to feel like you're personalizing, mm-hmm. especially with those computers. Like I think they came in like different colors.
Yeah, I had the graphite one, but yeah.
Of course, yeah, the boy one.
Well, there was orange, there was pink, there was blue and green. Yeah. They literally looked like fucking Jolly Ranchers.
Yeah. My friend had the green one.
Yeah.
I wanted the blue one, obviously.
Obviously.
Your. I don't know why I said obviously. My favorite color is blue, but no one knows that.
Okay. And your favorite character in Inside Out is Sadness.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was that stuff like that. That's sort of like, it's still kind of, it kind of feels like a toy, you know, yep. it feels like something you can.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the best lines in the Steve Jobs film is in the final section when his teenage daughter Lisa points at it and says, and that looks like Judy Jetson's Easy Bake Oven or something like that. Yeah. And it's true. Like they were kind of this weird thing that everyone was so into. Like it looked so futuristic and colorful. And that was kind of, I feel like the moment when, and to give this movie the slightest bit of credit, I do think that this film talks a lot, and Steve Jobs in this film talks a lot about personalizing things, making people love this thing, making it feel like it's part of your home, making it part of your life. That's such a huge seismic leap from what IBM was doing, which was like, we're giving you a fucking computer, be happy about it.
And, yeah, it's and it a functional machine.
Yeah.
And then this, in this movie, he has the computer with a little picture on the screen that says, hello, it's talking to you.
It's a creature.
You.
Yeah. That's literally the first scene of the Steve Jobs film where it's like, it will fucking say hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay. So you didn't watch this film in 99. I had never seen this film before. We both watched this from a link you sent me. I don't know where that link came from.
The Internet Archive.
Okay.
A very online thing.
It worked. It worked like gangbusters. Yeah. I airplayed it off of my iPad onto my TV screen. It was great. I loved it. Steve Jobs is thrilled somewhere.
The dream of Silicon Valley is alive.
Yeah, exactly. So what did you think of this film before we talked about it? And what do you think about it now?
I was so baffled when you said that. Like when you told me about the existence of this movie, because I did not know about it.
Sure. Yeah.
It was a little before my time when films were on the television.
Yes.
Although, of course, now films are back on the television.
But you mean you were a big, big fan of everyone's favorite Smart House.
Smart House.
Like you have seen
that is a film on the
TV
television.
Movies.
This is like adult Smart House.
It's the worst version of Smart House. Smart House runs laps around this.
Smart House for grown-up men. Men who were grown up in 1999. I was totally like, I was looking through the cast list, like, I know these names, and why are they in this movie that I've never heard of? You know, plenty of movies I've never heard of, but this one in particular surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I think about? Are we doing numbers or are we waiting?
0 to 99. Are we doing numbers?
I mean, I thought you were going
to
say
that. No. 0 to 99.
I'll do numbers.
Before the podcast?
Before the podcast. Is it before watching the film?
No, just before. After watching the film, this discussion.
That's
as
right.
to
yeah. Forgetting how your podcast
No. That's fine.
It was probably like a 30.
Sure.
Before.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about it as a sort of cultural object from a very specific point in time has been very interesting. And so now it's bumped up to a 31. Just kidding. It's bumped up to maybe like a 49.
Okay. Is there an ice cream truck outside your
window? There is an ice cream
truck
outside.
That was fantastic. There was just the slightest hint, and it sounded so eerie.
The eeriest sound I've ever heard is the ice cream truck going down the street in the height of summer 2020 when nobody was outside.
Oh, that's eerie. That's a Stephen King thing. Were people going out and buying ice cream?
No. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't.
You know, it's funny you brought up the cast, because it is worth noting that, like, this comes out in 1989. Noah Wiley is still knee deep in his ER contract at
is
that
he
point.
The librarian, so, or is that a different
he
guy?
He is. The librarians is him too.
Oh, God. Okay. I knew it.
Also, by the way, a TNT joint.
Yeah.
So, you know, as was Falling Skies. Noah Wiley made a lot of money for TNT. But
I was just talking about that show with somebody. It was because of a tweet. I have to send it to you. But it was like, it was an image from Westworld, the current season of Westworld. And it was like two people beside a future car. And the tweet was like, this looks like a still from like a mid-2015 show or 2010s show that's called like After Earth. And there's like an umlaut over the E. And I was like, this is so perfect. So I was looking up like shows from that period of time being
Are
like,
are you still watching Westworld?
No. Even though people say it's good now.
No.
I got burned.
I got burned too many times by that show. I've gone back to that show too many times. I'm just like, no. But Noah Wiley. So my assumption is he shoots this over the hiatus. This was probably, you know, a relatively quick shoot. You know, I get it. You know, there's only so much you can do. He didn't do a ton of movies when he was on ER, just because A, you know, lining it up with your schedule is a pain in the ass, and B, whatever. But like, he'll just always be Carter to me. That's just for what that's worth. So before this podcast, I was a lot higher than you. I was at a 60, and that's way too high.
Yeah.
I was at a 60 because I was like, I found it kind of endearing. And as we mentioned, a cultural object, I was like, you know, I give it too much credit. I'm now down to 48. So I'm right where you are, which is that, like, I wouldn't recommend this to anybody to watch. But I, you know, obviously I enjoyed talking with you about it. And I feel as though it's an interesting, weird little flashpoint that I think is worthy of sort of exploration on some level. You can find it for free on where was it again?
The Internet Archive. I think if you just look up, because this is what I did after you told me about it, or like, how are we going to watch this movie? And I just looked up like Pirates of Silicon Valley watch online, and there's the link.
Oh, perfect. So you can watch it there. I guess you could also rent it maybe if you wanted to. I don't know if it's available for rent.
You might just have to buy it.
Buy a DVD. Don't buy a DVD of this, guys. Watch it for free online. And by that, I mean, watch like 15 minutes of it or you'll get it. It's fine. It's not great. It's certainly a product of its time. But more than anything, Emma, thank you for being here and talking about it with me.
Thank you for having me. This was very fun, despite the not fun time I had watching the source material for our great
The source material. I mean, listen, it's what it is. I'm actually genuinely, I'm wondering if I should read the book. Like, I wonder if the book's actually pretty good. Like, I wonder if the book
like some of this has to be good.
I just feel like, again, covering like 1971 to 1997, like, I'm sure that the book gets into detail about things that, you know, that are you looking up the book now?
What is the book? It's kind of a cooler.
It's called Fire in the Valley, The Making of the Personal Computer. That, by the way, Fire in the Valley is so much better than Pirates of the Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's another reason why I was like, I would have watched this in school. Yeah. Like, that's the sort of title something like this would have.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being here and doing this. It was
thank
a pleasure.
You for having me. This was fun. I'm sorry that my cat was so...
Are you fucking kidding? I don't give a shit. It's fine.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.